Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. You've probably heard in the news recently a lot of talk about critical race theory or CRT, about efforts to teach critical race theory even in elementary schools. So how should we as Catholics respond to ideas like critical race theory, or how should we respond to the sin of racism? I invited an excellent guest on today to talk to us about that. His name is Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. He's an evangelist speaker. He has a master's in theological studies in the University of Dallas. He hosts a national weekly broadcast on Modern Day Radio, and he's the author of several books, including Behold the Man, A Catholic Vision of Male Spirituality, and Father Augustus Tolton, the slave who became the first African-American priest. So I'm really excited to jump into this topic. I have another video on my channel that deals with the subject of anti-racism and Ibram X. Kendi. So if you guys are interested in that, be sure to go and check out that video. And don't forget to like and subscribe to this channel and to support us at TrenthornPodcast.com so we can keep on bringing on amazing guests like Deacon Harold. Deacon, welcome to the Council of Trent podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be with you. And I am a subscriber and a huge fan of Council of Trent. I even have you on my phone. In fact, so when I listen to you on the plane and, when I'm traveling around the world. So it's great to be a guest on here. I'm truly honored. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm glad that you're on the show, Deacon Harold, because the genesis of today's episode was the last time I saw you. I'm really glad I got to see you in person, because with COVID and the pandemic, it feels like we're all stuck in these little Zoom meetings. But we were at a conference right here in Dallas, Texas, where I live. And so you got to speak there. I spoke and we were talking. You were telling me about a future book that you're writing with Ignatius Press. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So my first book, which you mentioned, Behold the Man, A Catholic Vision of Male Spirituality, is by Ignatius Press. And they approached me about doing a second book. And so during COVID, I've been speaking and then writing articles about a Catholic response to racism. And so Ignatius thought that'd be a great book. So as part of the book, what I'm doing is I'm critiquing three secular approaches to race that are being adopted or inculcated into the Catholic ethos today. One of them is the Black Lives Matter movement, right? Not the words Black Lives Matter, but the Black Lives Matter movement. The second is liberation theology. And the third is critical race theory. Mm-hmm. Now, out of all those three, the one that I was least familiar with was critical race theory. So I've been doing a deep dive into it in preparation to write that section of the book. And so that's what I'm going to be addressing today.
Very good. So then let's jump into it, because I think, honestly, most people were not familiar with it. Really, up until about, I mean, I had heard about critical theory for some time, different, especially in biblical criticism and other kinds of postmodern theories, things like that. But I wasn't as familiar with critical race theory. I think a lot of people, Deacon, it's kind of taken them by surprise. Like, oh, suddenly now it's all in the news, being taught in schools, and we don't know what to make of it because we haven't heard of it much before. What's a good summary then that you could give to our viewers and our listeners? Just the elevator pitch. What is critical race theory?
Okay, great question. Well, the first thing to keep in mind is that critical race theory is just that, a theory. Okay, it's basically an intellectual hypothesis that has the premise that race is not about categorical differentiation or biological distinction within a species, but a socially constructed instrument used to exploit and oppress people of color. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's basically what it is. Now, the origins, see, one thing I try to do, where's the source documentation?
Right.
Right. So I was like, okay, where is the source document for critical race theory? Interestingly, it didn't exist till 1989. Okay. So, yeah. So what I've discovered in doing the research is that critical race theory comes out of critical legal theory, which in terms comes out of, as you mentioned, Trent, Marxist influence critical theory.
Right.
Right. So critical legal theory examines how the law and legal institutions serve the interests of the wealthy and the powerful at the expense of the poor and the marginalized. And that comes out after the drawing from the thought of Karl Marx and Sigmund Freud, a political philosophy geared toward the subversion of this societal framework that dominate and oppress people. Right. So you can see the seeds of even communism and socialism out of that kind of thinking.
So there's kind of like, we have to always, you know, sort of avoid extremes. So it seems like this is going to the category of talking about race solely in this sociological oppressor, oppressee, when it is more complicated than that, because the people who would say there are no biological differences, clearly we have biological differences among us. And there's a solid Catholic way of understanding the diversity of the human community. And of course, there are people who have socially applied those biological differences in very wicked ways. So it seems like they might, maybe it's appealing, Deacon, because there are kernels of truth here, but then they're running far past it with stuff that is not true.
Excellent point, Trent. And here's the interesting thing. You know, you think about how do we approach race from a Catholic perspective, right? So here's very something very interesting. You can't use the Bible for that. What do I mean? Race, as we understand it today, as biological differentiation within the species, is not really something that's rooted in Scripture. Because Scripture doesn't worry about race as the color or of one's skin, but it's more tribal and national when they talk about race, right?
Like whether you're a Jew or a Gentile.
Exactly. Right. And so what the Bible does, but there's some very beautiful things that says, what does Paul say? There's no longer Jew or Greek or slave or free, or you can get black or white, or we're all one under the body of Christ.
Right.
So though, that's the thing that Bible emphasized that. In fact, there's no physical description of Jesus. There's no what color he was, how tan he was, because that wasn't important. The message of Christ was important. Right. And so what critical race theories have to do, that they have to ignore biology. But that's something that we're seeing today. We're seeing, for example, marriage. You have to, in order to come to a cultural understanding of marriage, you have to redefine what the words actually mean. So marriage comes from, you know, the Latin matrimonium. Right. Matri is a derivative of the word mater, which means mother. And monium is a suffix ending in Latin, which means the state or condition of something. So marriage literally means the state or condition of motherhood.
Right.
So if you want to redefine that, you have to change what those words mean. And that's what they're doing. And one of the tenets of critical race theory is negating biology. Well, it has nothing to do with biology. It has to do with, you know, one person, one race or one group of people oppressing another group of people. So you have to ignore the fact that, you know, this is shocking, Trent.
Yeah.
You're white and I'm black. There's literally there's a physical difference between the two of us. I'm darker than you, Trent. but that doesn't mean that you are better than me or I'm better than you. Because see, what this does, ultimately, it actually, instead of bringing people together, it actually separates. It works for
it creates this division. Idea that if for me to have an interaction with you, as if I have to start with an assumption that you and I already have an antagonism between us. And that's just something that we have to accept and work around. Whereas I would rather say, why should I accept that? Now, I will say, obviously, people are going to have innate prejudices and biases. And that's not just with race. People have that towards gender, nationality. You know, we all have these different things. I'd like to hear a comment on this about what is most concerning about critical race theory. But it seems to me that it takes things that, you know, you always have to be aware of, and bakes it into this is just the system you have to work through. And it's just inevitable you're going to have this oppressor, oppressee system based on race or class. And it almost seems like it creates the very problems it seeks to solve.
No, you're exactly right. And, you know, one thing, though, that you mentioned that I think is important, I'm going to talk about this in much more depth in the book, is that it sets up this natural tension, right, between races. But that comes out of the critical theory, what really comes out of what's called the Hegelian dialectic. which again, I'm going to explain much more deeply in the book because it's philosophical. But the idea of the Hegelian dialectic, and I'll keep this very, very simple, is that there's thesis, antithesis, and synthesis.
And then, so in other words, they go together.
Exactly. So you have this idea, you have this counter idea, and the clash of those two things develop a synthesis, which is a new idea. So you have to set up these pinnacles of conflict in order to advance. That's basically the idea. So why this is problematic? For example, it says racism in the United States is normal and not an aberration. That's one of the tenets. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's normal. No, it's not normal. we know that because we know that as believers in Jesus Christ, as Catholics, that racism is a sin. It's not normal.
And not even that. But think about what happens when a video of legitimate racism is put on TikTok or on Twitter. What happens? The community rallies around the victim, even in cases where it's muddled and we're not sure what is going on. The community as whole, it goes viral and people denounce the racist act, either the actual act or the perceived act. So I think on both counts, you're right. It's not true.
Oh, absolutely. And another one of the tenets that's problematic for us as Catholics is that legal advances or even setbacks for people of color tend to serve the interests of dominant white groups. That's one of the tenets. It's called material determinism. So in other words, for example, they'll say that when you're going for a job, right? Mm-hmm. I would as a person of color, I would hate the fact that someone is choosing me simply because I'm black. Mm-hmm. You know, you have two people that are equally qualified, and they give the person to the black record solely because it's black. No, you know, I mean, now, okay, you should look at, okay, if the person is not equally qualified, they'll still give it to the person of color because they have to have a quota, or they have to have, you know, that to me, that makes no sense.
Well, there's a bigotry. Also, it's interesting. I find some of the most problematic, even racist things are those who claim to denounce racism. They peddle what I would call is a bigotry of low expectations. This idea that, well, they claim to be enlightened when it comes to race, but they treat people of color and these other groups as, oh, well, we have to give special treatment because they can't do any better on their own because of this social system working against them. And of course, what's hard, Deacon, I feel like, is, are there racist people out there? Well, sure, there's sexist people, there's anti-Catholic people, there are people who hate unborn children, you know, but I wouldn't say that the vast majority of people are, you know, pro-choice, like hate the unborn or something. Just like people who are trying to understand racial issues, I'm not saying the majority of them are racist. But when you try to turn everything into this system, and especially indoctrinating children with it, with this idea of this inherent antagonism, that's really worrying.
No, you're absolutely right. And I love what you said about the idea of low expectations as well. You know, that's something that that I think is actually holding our communities back. You know, another one of these tenets here is that members of minority groups periodically undergo what they call differential racialization, mm-hmm. or the imposition of negative stereotypes depending on the needs or interests of white people. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, wait a minute now. Think about this, Trent. How do we even come to an idea of racism? Because you're not born racist, mm-hmm. right? I mean, think of little kids that playing together on the playground. You know, my wife is Irish, so my kids are mixed.
Right.
But when I see my kids playing on the playground with a black kid or Hispanic kid or an Asian kid, they're just playing. They don't look at color. They're just kids, because kids don't see that. What happens is over time, they look at television, the media starts to creep in, or they hear dad telling a joke,
right,
or something like that, and they start to learn. So racism is something that's learned. It's right. Not something that's innate or inherent within us. So for critical race theories to say that stereotypes are being used by white people to denigrate Black people. No, I mean, because think about it. You know, there's all kinds of racial things about Italians, for example,
right?
Or Irish, or different things like that.
Right.
There's positive and negative images. So what we can't allow to do is those negative images to define a particular race and say, this is characteristic because I saw it on TV. Those images aren't true. We have to look, you know, to the teachings of our faith and to see that God created all of us made in his image and likeness. And we need to see people the way God sees them. That's the key.
Well, it's interesting. I would, your point about children, I would say I've never met a child under the age of 7 who is racist, and I've never met a child under the age of 7 who is pro-choice. You know, because like when they see people regardless of their skin color or their development in the womb, children just see other human beings. They see that they are different, and sometimes they want to understand those differences, like someone's taller or shorter, or if a child meets someone for the first time who's missing a limb, it's like, okay, well, how do I understand this? And you tell them, well, look, God made us, we're all different in many different and blessed ways, but we're all human because God made all of us from conception onward. And that's what we need to talk about with children, to appreciate the diversity and beauty and the dignity of every human being. So let's talk though about, especially this is coming up, I think most people are getting the real pushback, Deacon Harold, that if this were just something that was in university, ivory tower, whatever, they study dumb things there all the time. But it's this idea that like, and what I think some of these people are saying is, we're not trying to teach critical race theory to elementary school students. That's something you guys have made up. You know, we're not trying to do that. But they are trying to do that, right? Because even at the ages of like 5, 6, 7 years old, they're teaching that anti-racism. Do you think they're being disingenuous if they say we're not really teaching this to little kids?
Oh, yeah. They're simply lying, because that's not true. And I'll prove it to you. One of the areas of critical race theory that I've been delving into is this thing called intersectionality.
Right.
All right. So that an individual cannot be identified solely with one particular group. So it's an intersection between race, gender, sexual identity, nationality, all that kind of stuff. So in other words, so critical race theory would say, as nothing, again, this is critical race theory, but they're saying, well, wait a minute, we need to take into account intersectionality. So if you're Black, lesbian, you know, with a learning disability, then that, you know, this, all this intersectionality needs to play into it. We already know that the educational system is already being infiltrated by the transgender movement, by all these other elements, and critical race theory is playing right into that. So it is absolutely disingenuous for them to say that they're not trying to indoctrinate children into this way of thinking. That's exactly what they're doing.
Right.
In fact, there's even school boards that are being movements trying to convince school boards to adopt this into their programs, just like they're doing with transgenderism right now.
Right. And it's not like they're trying to teach elementary school students about diversity or kindness or not being bigoted, but trying to promote and what I don't like, Deacon, is trying to say that these particular theories about systemic racism. And of course, obviously, in the past, we had laws that the very laws themselves were used to oppress people of color. And some of them hang over even to today. I know in Louisiana, I think a person of color couldn't get buried in a cemetery because the cemetery had like some old rule in there from 1947 saying Black people couldn't be buried there. But I would say that's the exception. That's not the rule. But then trying to tell little kids, oh, well, the way everything is set up, to tell like the white students, if you're succeeding, that's because of your race you didn't earn. And to tell a person of color that if you are failing, that is because of something that is completely beyond your control. It seems like it creates kind of a culture of helplessness instead of actually affirming a person's inner dignity so that they don't have this defeatist attitude. Do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah. I totally see that. And you're absolutely right. And the thing is, you know, what that does, it sets up this dichotomy. For example, And you know, so white people now have to apologize for being white. And so you're throwing these labels on entire groups of people without looking at individual responsibility.
Right.
You know, and what they fail to differentiate is systemic racism within, as you mentioned, because there were laws that actually promoted and encouraged racism, you know, the Jim Crow laws. And before right. that, the Dred Scott versus John F. Sanford Supreme Court decision, 1857, said black people were property and right. not human beings. So they were woven into the fabric of the law. We get that. But now there are in our culture today, laws that prevent that from ever happening again.
Right.
You see, so you can't, so you have to differentiate systemic racism as we just discussed and people within systems who are racist.
And what I would say though, Deacon, is that there are systemic racism that still exists that this group, the CRT advocates, won't accept. For example, back in 1915, Harvard had quotas because they were worried there were too many Jewish students at Harvard. And now there's the concern that there are too many Asian students, and the Asian applicants, they excel at all of the metrics to get in. So what they do is they say, oh, in your personal interview, well, we didn't think you were very personable, or we didn't think that you were very, only for the Asian students, that you lacked these personal traits that we thought are make for a good college student. If they did that to a black student, it would be an outcry to do that. But this idea of, I guess this goes into the idea of equality and equity too. That one comes up all the time. Because you and I would agree, well, we should be promoting everyone should be given equal opportunities and treated equally under the law. Not, well, we have to jerry-rig the system so there are, so if black people make up 14% of the population, then they have to make up 14% of everything. When different groups are going to have different interests and preferences. It's kind of like people say, why aren't there more women running Fortune 500 companies, you know, if women are half population? But that same group doesn't worry, why aren't half of all kindergarten teachers men? It seems very selective when they care about these things.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And it goes back to this lie of the culture that in order to be equal, you have to be the same.
Yeah.
Right. So in the book of Genesis, we see that God said, male and female, he created them and be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. So it's exactly because of their differences that they're able to have unity. So there's unity within distinction. And that is a principle that we've completely lost today. So I say, well, in order to be equal, you have to be the same. So unless men are doing what women do and women are doing what men do and this, you know, then no one's equal. You know, and that's not true. And so you see, and so what you've been discussing, Trent, is the repercussions of that kind of thinking, right. You know, in our culture today.
Well, let's talk then about, as we have a few minutes left, what then is the authentically Catholic way to combat racism, racial bias? What is interesting, before you answer that question, I will say, like I would tell the CRT advocates and others who want to say America's racist, this or that, I would ask them, well, here's my statement. We live in the least racist time in America's history. And I would say, can you affirm? And if you can't, and actually I've asked them online, Deacon Harold, is this true? And they're not willing to affirm that. And I say, well, if you can't, when in our history were we less racist than now? It does boggle my mind what they want to try to rewrite reality as. So you can comment on that if you want, but also what is then the Catholic way to promote action against the sin of racism?
Yeah, that's very important. I think the first thing we knew is define what racism is. Before COVID, I was out speaking to the parish, and one of the folks found out that I went to Notre Dame. He's a Notre Dame fan. So he comes up to me and goes, oh, you went to Notre Dame? What position did you play? And I could see the metrics in his mind, right? The calculus was big black guy plus Notre Dame equals football. You know, when the truth is I had an academic scholarship to Notre Dame, I'm the first person in my family ever to go to college.
Yeah.
And so what he should have asked me was, oh, you went to Notre Dame. What did you study? Because right. that's what he would have asked. Now, people say that was racist. That was racist. No, it wasn't racist. Here's why. Prejudice means that you're making a determination about someone without any factual knowledge. Just based on subjectivity, Right. And racism is that prejudice. But what makes it racist is the added dimension of I'm saying this or I'm thinking this because my race is superior to your race.
Right.
Now, he didn't say that to me because he thought, well, my race is better than your race. That's why I'm going to pigeonhole you to, as a football player. That no, he was ignorant. He was, right. And so it was prejudice, not racist. So we can't convolute those things.
Right.
But the main thing is we have to see people made in the image and likeness of God. Mm-hmm. And that's what Mother Teresa did. When she saw someone, she saw Jesus in the person standing in front of her. I think we need to appreciate the gifts of cultural diversity. You know, for example, one of the things that we can do in the parish, because one guy contacted me, goes, my parish is, his words, country club white. Okay, but we have all these people of color around us. We want to attract them to our church. How do we do that? I said, well, one of the things you can do is, for example, if you're like St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, all you have pictures of is Elizabeth Ann Seton in your church, how about bringing in pictures of St. Kateri Tetekwitha or Martin de Porres, or, you know, make the church, you know, look like the people that you want to attend there.
Right.
You know, simple things like that. Having a potluck. Where people, you can invite the Black parish down the street, Hispanic parish down the street, Asian parish down the street, have people come, have a potluck, people bring their cultural foods, and have the people get up and talk about their experience. This is what it's like being Hispanic living in this city, or here's what it's like being Black and trying to live my Catholic faith in this diocese. And just hear people's experiences and their stories and to empathize with them and learn from them and get to know people. You know, in the biblical sense, yada, right? Yada in Hebrew means knowledge that's gained by experience. Know that person and not just look at them and see a color and have a stereotype. I think conversation and dialogue is essential.
So you're saying to combat racism, instead of what critical race theory does to divide people into these antagonistic classes, we should treat them as individuals with gifts, talents, and inherent dignity? What a remarkable idea, Deacon Harold.
that's our Catholic faith, you know. But we just simply have to be Catholic. I mean, we have to put God back into society, you know. I think what's happening that we're seeing today, Trent, is that instead of being made in the image and likeness of God, people are trying to make God in their own image and likeness. Yeah. And that was a lie. You will be God. You don't need God. Know why? Because you're your own God.
Yeah.
That's exactly
you know what's
what
beautiful,
we're
though?
Today.
Being Catholic and dealing with an issue like racism, like Catholic means universal. And so I loved taking teens when I took them to World Youth Day in 2005 and 2008. And when you get there, especially on the last day, when you're with everybody out on you go to a big field and wait for the Pope to arrive for mass. And there's hundreds of thousands of people there. You see people, Catholics from every country around the world, Pacific Island, from the Middle East, from Northern Europe, Southern Europe, from Africa, from Ghana. You walk around, you just see we are all different, but these are blessed differences, all united in one thing, our universal faith. So I think that's one of the great things about being Catholic is that our faith is not, you know, you have like an orthodoxy, like, well, I'm a Russian Orthodox, or I'm a Greek Orthodox, or I'm a Southern Baptist, or I'm a Evangelical Lutheran. It's like, well, no, but what's great about being Catholic is we just have this universal identification. So it just rocks, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No. And I probably winding up talking about Father Augustus Tolte, you know, the first Black priest in the United States who was rejected from every seminary in the United States because he was Black, ended up going to Rome and becoming a priest, sent back to the United States, to Quincy, Illinois, to be a priest there, where the people kind of welcomed him, but the priest then rejected him. So he lived a life rejection of in-your-face racism, born a slave, and became the first African American. Why did he stay Catholic? I mean, after everything he went through, if he would have left the church, nobody would have blamed him.
Yeah.
But why? The most important question, though, is why did he stay? In the face of such bigotry and hatred, Father Tolton was able to discern what many people fail to perceive and don't fully appreciate, that what the Catholic Church actually teaches is true and good and beautiful, despite the people in the church that are all sinners in need of God's mercy. Right? And Father Tolte recognized and acknowledged that that personal sin and human weakness is not greater or more powerful than the strength of objective truth found in the Catholic faith. And he said that the church frees us from a double slavery, that of the mind and the body. She frees us from both. And he said, she, the church, is the church for our people.
Well, Deacon Harold, thank you so much for being able to be on the show today. Where can people go to learn more about your speaking, about your books? Where can they go to get a hold of you for all that good stuff?
I made it real easy. Just simply deaconharold.com, and everything's there.
Awesome. Well, I'll encourage our listeners, go check out deaconharold.com. Thank you all for listening. If you're not a subscriber like Deacon Harold is, he's a faithful subscriber to Council of Trent. Be sure to do that. Like this video, subscribe. If you're listening on podcast, please consider leaving a review on iTunes or Google Play. That's always helpful. And help us to bring on more great guests like this. Check out trenthornpodcast.com, where if you go there, you get access. If you support our channel at trenthornpodcast.com, you get access to my catechism study series, covers the whole catechism. My New Testament study series covers a whole New Testament. You aren't going to want to miss that at trenthornpodcast.com. Deacon Harold, thank you once again for being on the Council of Trent podcast.
Thank you for having me, and may God bless you and continue the great work you're doing for the church.
Thank you, Deacon, and thank you all for listening. And I hope you all have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trenthornpodcast.com.